All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, September 29th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly 52 degrees, overcast, and soon to be raining here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Wednesday? We titled the show CRISPR, Wings, Bacon, Gene Drives, Gates as in Billy Gates, DARPA, and edible vaccines. We took a look at a lot of disturbing things that they are doing with some of these new technologies in the lab. And I think we are going to continue on with 21st century food, and that would be P-H-O-O-D for the show today. So back about a year ago or so, maybe even 2 years ago, we had talked about, in 2008, the FDA approved clone meat for human consumption in the United States. And even though they approved it, they said, well, it's going to be voluntary, whether or not you label it, but you don't have to. But we approve it as safe to eat as food. And let that be a lesson to you, because we could have been eating cloned food since 2008 and never knew it. FDA approves clone meat for consumption. ABCnews.com. January 16th, 2008. It could be years before meat from cloned animals hits store shelves now that the Food and Drug Administration has given producers permission to sell it. But the milk from cloned offspring could hit the market sooner. So you might have been drinking cloned milk all this time. The milk and meat for cattle, swine, and goat clones are as safe to eat as the food we eat every day, says Randall Lutter of the FDA. Currently, only a few hundred clones exist, and they will likely be used for breeding. But some genetically modified food is already available in American grocery stores. And remember, this is 2008. In fact, the food industry says that if a product has corn or soybean in it, and that still holds true today, most of the time, it has probably been genetically modified. We would not be using those ingredients unless the authorities had evaluated them, and determined them to be safe, wink, says Mark Nelson of the Grocery Manufacturers Association. Other countries have moved more slowly and been more cautious, of course they were, in giving the green light to clone food. Remember, BASF moved their headquarters over to the United States because we were much more GMO-friendly. In Europe, where a more activist consumer culture exists, and they don't just stuff their face and not ask any questions, recent reports said that it, quote, is very unlikely that there is any difference in the safety of cloned or genetically modified products and natural products. But Europe remains divided about food that contains genetically modified plants and grains, while in the United States, genetically modified food is so common that most people don't even realize that they're eating it. And that is the truth. But we're going to find out where this pathway has led us to. And this is being not only given medication in our foods. We had read about five ways to get CRISPR inside of the body, but also ways for them to genetically modify us utilizing edible CRISPR. This is where the disturbing slippery slope comes in. Critics worry that the cloned and genetically modified foods may be unsafe for consumption, and this is a really huge uncontrolled experiment on the American people, which is what I've said, and also echoes Andrew Kimbrell of the Center for Food Safety. They also worry about secondary health effects of eating cloned meat, such as circumstances in which clones develop health problems later on and need more antibiotics and drugs. We think that there are consequent effects that the FDA has not yet looked at that could impact human health, says Joseph Mendelson of the Center for Food Safety. What the FDA may do in the future is allow producers of single meats and milks. So allow producers to put a label on their products saying that they are not from cloned animals. And we read about that a while ago, that at one point they had barred people from putting those labels on their products. Meanwhile, the government has asked food producers to honor a voluntary moratorium, ding, ding, voluntary, on selling cloned meat animal products while the marketing plans are being worked out. Shoppers who want to avoid genetically modified foods should search for labels that say 100% organic, because by law, in 2008, those could not include biotech ingredients. So we potentially have been eating cloned meat and drinking cloned milk for quite a while now. Scientific American, are we eating cloned meat? Well, good question. The FDA approved cloned meat is safe for consumption, and has any yet hit the grocery stores? So let me see if I can find a date on this story. Normally, Scientific American is pretty good about it, but I do not. So cloning has been controversial ever since the Scottish scientist announced in 1996 that they had cloned their first mammal, which was Dolly the sheep. While Dolly lived a painful arthritic life and died prematurely, possibly due to the imperfections of cloning, industry nonetheless began seeking out ways to capitalize on this new technology. Meanwhile, critics bemoan cloning as immoral and potentially a health and safety risk, given an as yet unknown consequence of eating foods generated in this way. And remember, China has a very large cloning factory. I don't have that one pulled up right now, but they were going to be doing racehorses and some sort of order a clone of your dead dog Spot sort of thing. Meanwhile, critics bemoan cloning and cows, I think, and humans, if we wanted. Critics bemoan cloning as immoral and a potential health and safety risk, given as an unknown consequence of eating foods generated in this way. And in January 2008, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the sale of cloned animals and their offspring for food, despite fierce opposition from animal welfare and consumer advocacy groups, environmental organizations, some members of Congress, and many consumers. So they approved it anyway. Our evaluation is that food from cloned animals is safe as the food we eat every day. Don't pay attention to the revolving door between the biotech agencies and the FDA, says Stephen Sundolf, the FDA's chief of veterinary medicine. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has asked that producers withhold cloned animals, but not their offspring, from the food supply, while farmers, processors, grocery stores, and restaurants decide how they will respond to the FDA's landmark decision. Unsurprisingly, industry groups also argued that beef and milk from cloned animals is safe to consume, and they cite a 2005 University of Connecticut study which concluded that the beef and milk from a cloned cow did not pose any health or safety threats to people consuming it. But critics say that the oft-cited single study was far too limited to yield any meaningful conclusions. Milk and beef was taken from just 6 cloned animals, and the study did not take into account whether the clones were more susceptible to infection or other microbial problems, as many scientists suspect. Other researchers have noted severe deformities in many cloned animals, as well as a higher incidence of reproductive, immune, and other health problems. In Washington, D.C.-based Center for Food Safety, in a petition filed in late 2006, declared, quote, "The available science shows that cloning presents serious food safety risks, animal welfare concerns, and unresolved ethical issues that require strict oversight," just like all these disruptive technologies. The group announced on September 2, 2008, that 20 leading U.S. food producers, including Kraft, General Mills, Gerber Nestle, Campbell's Soup, and Ben & Jerry's, will not use cloned animals in their products. The move by these companies represents a growing industry trend to respond to consumer demand for better food safety, environmental, and animal welfare standards, the group said, making this announcement. Given the FDA's green light, consumers' only hope of avoiding cloned animal products may be to appeal to businesses directly, not to peddle such items. The Pennsylvania-based American Anti-Vivisection Society, what on earth, which opposes all forms of animal research and testing, has mounted a campaign to urge McDonald's to forego cloned animals in its 30,000 restaurants worldwide. So I guess that was the end of that one. So on top of cloned animals, we also have run across some other things happening with animals, and that would be distinctly pigs, Georgie Porgy Church, and some of his work in CRISPRing human genes into pigs to grow replacement organs, and that is called xenotransplantation. This is out of National Geographic, January of 2017. Human-pig hybrids created in the lab. Here are the facts. Scientists hope the chimera embryos represent a first step toward life-saving lab-grown organs. Uh-oh, there's an ad playing. Oh, that was weird. In a remarkable, if likely controversial, feat, scientists announced today that they have created the first successful human-animal hybrids, or at least that we know about. The project proves that the human cells can be introduced into non-human organisms, survive, and even grow inside of the host animal, in this case, pigs. The biomedical advance has long been a dream and a quandary for scientists hoping to address a critical shortage of donor organs. Every 10 minutes, a person is added to the national waiting list for organ transplants, and every day, 22 people on that list die without the organs they need. What if, rather than relying on a generous donor, you could grow a custom organ inside of an animal instead? And that's one step closer to reality. An international team of researchers led by Salk Institute, we run across them a lot now, reports in the journal Cell, the team created what is known scientifically as a chimera, an organism that contains cells from two different species. In the past, human-animal chimeras have been beyond reach, and such experiments are currently ineligible for public funding in the United States. So far, Salk team has relied on private donors, probably lots of tech billionaires, for the Chimera Project. Public opinion, too, has hampered the creation of organisms that are part human, part animal. But the lead study author, Jun Wu of the Salk Institute, says, "We need only to look at mythical chimeras like the human bird hybrids we know as angels for a different perspective." Oh, yes. Let's invoke religious imagery now. In ancient civilizations, chimeras were associated with gods, he says, and our ancestors thought that chimeric forms can guard humans. Oh, God. In a sense, that's what our team hopes for the human-animal hybrids. And in two ways, there are two ways to make chimeras. The first is to introduce the organs from one animal into another, which is a risky proposition because the host's immune system may cause the organ to be rejected. The other method is to begin at an embryonic level, introducing one animal's cells into the embryo of another's and letting them grow together into a hybrid. I know it sounds weird, but this is an ingenious way to eventually solve a number of vexing biological problems with lab-grown organs. While scientists discovered stem cells and the master cells that produce any kind of body tissue, they seem to contain infinite scientific promise. But convincing those cells to grow into the right kind of tissue and organs can be difficult. Cells must survive in petri dishes, and scientists have used scaffolds to make organs grow into the right shapes. And now we read the other day about magnetic fields as well. And often the patient must undergo painful and invasive procedures to harvest the tissues needed to kick off that kind of process. At first, Juan Carlos Inzut Belmonte, a professor in the Salk Institute's Gene Expression Laboratory, thought the concept of using a host embryo to grow organs seemed straightforward enough. However, it took Belmonte more than 40 collaborators 4 years to figure out how to make a human-animal chimera. To do so, the team piggybacked off prior chimera research conducted on mice and rats. Other scientists had already figured out how to grow the pancreatic tissue of a rat inside of a mouse. And on Wednesday, that team announced the mouse's pancreas grown inside of rats successfully treated diabetes when parts of the healthy organ were transplanted into the diseased mice. The Salk group took the concept one further, using genome editing tool called CRISPR to hack into the mouse's biocysts, the precursors of embryos, and that's where they deleted the genes that the mice needed to grow certain organs. And when they introduced the rat stem cells capable of producing those organs, those cells flourished. The mice that resulted managed to live into adulthood, and some even grew chimeric gallbladders made out of mouse and rat cells, even though rats don't have that particular organ. The team then took the stem cells from the rats and injected them into a pig blastocyst, and the version failed, not surprisingly, since rats and pigs have dramatically different gestation times and evolutionary ancestors. But pigs have notable similarities to humans, though they take less time to gestate, and their organs do look a lot like ours. Not that these similarities make the task any easier. The team discovered that in order to introduce human cells into pigs without killing them, they had to get the timing just right. We tried three different types of human cells, essentially representing three different times in the development process, explains Jun Wu, a Salk Institute scientist and the paper's first author. Through trial and error, they learned that naive perplunant stem cells, the stem cells with unlimited potential, didn't survive as well as the ones that developed a bit more on. And when those just right human cells were injected into the pig's embryos, the embryos survived. Then they were put into adult pigs, which carried the embryos for between 3 to 4 weeks before they were removed and analyzed. In all, the team created 186 later stage chimeric embryos that survived, said Wu. We estimate that each one had about 100,000 human cells, which that's a low percentage, and it could present a problem for the method in the long run, says Ki Cheng, a stem cell expert at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State University. The human tissue appears to slow the growth of the embryo, notes Cheng, and organ growth from such embryos as they develop would likely be rejected by humans since they would contain so much pig tissue. The next big step, says Chang, is to figure out whether it is possible to increase the number of human cells the embryos can tolerate. The current method is a start, but it still isn't clear if that hurdle can be overcome. Bellamante agrees, noting that it could take years to use the process to create functioning human organs. The technique could be put to much use sooner as a way to study human embryo development and understand disease. And those real-time insights could just be as valuable as the ability to grow an organ. There are other steps that we need to take, but it's very intriguing, very, very intriguing. So now let's take a look at something that we mentioned the other day, and we've talked about it before. And that is Smithfield Farms. This is out of Reuters magazine. Smithfield makes move on the market for pig human transplants. Oh, didn't we just read about CRISPR bacon making disease-resistant bacon the other day? Well, this is where this is all coming from. Smithfield Foods, the world's largest pork producer and now owned by the Chinese, has established a separate bioscience unit to expand its role in supplying pig parts for medical uses, with the ultimate goal of selling pig organs for transplantation into humans. Ding, ding. Routine pig-human organ transplants are years away, but recent scientific advances are breaking down the barriers that frustrated prior attempts to use pigs as a ready supply for replacement parts for sick or injured people, making it an attractive new market. Our bread and butter has always been bacon, sausage, and fresh pork. Very much a food-focused operation, says Courtney Staton, vice president of Smithfield's new bioscience unit. But we want to signal to the medical device and science communities that this is an area that we are focused on and we are not strictly packers, she said. Smithfield, a $14 billion subsidiary of China's WH Group, in its first move, has joined a public-private tissue engineering consortium funded by an $80 million grant from who? Oh, the U.S. Department of Defense. We read about that earlier. That was a DARPA project that was going on that included Georgie Porgy Church. Smithfield is the only pork producer joining healthcare companies, including Abbott Labs, Medtronics, and United Therapeutics Corp. Transplants are used for people diagnosed with organ failure who have no other treatment options. Transplants from animals could help close a critical gap to help those in need. The United Network for Organ Sharing estimates that on an average, 22 people die each day while waiting for a transplant. Smithfield already harvests materials for medical use from the 16 million hogs it slaughters each year. The company owns more than 51% of its farms and hopefully will sell directly to researchers and healthcare companies, which now typically buys from third parties. Stanton said the U.S. market for pork byproducts used for medical and pet food as well as non-food purposes stands at more than a $100 billion industry, and that excludes any potential market for animal-to-human transplants, known as xenotransplants. Smith has deals in the works for supplying pig organs to two entities, though Stanton would not disclose their names. It is just a huge potential space, and this could be the leading edge and focused on building relationships that are critical, and that would be with the biomedical industry. Pigs have long been a tantalizing source of transplants because their organs are so similar to humans. A hog heart at the time of slaughter, for example, is about the size of an adult human heart, and other organs from pigs are being researched for transplantation into humans, including kidney, liver, and lungs. We'd also read, though, one of the big issues with transplants from pigs is zoological diseases that can be passed between the two, but don't worry about it because Georgie Porgy Church found a way to CRISPR the pigs to get rid of the diseases. Prior efforts at pig-to-human transplants have failed because of genetic differences that caused organ rejections or viruses that posed an infection risk. Swiss drug maker Novartis has folded $1 billion into xenotransplantation efforts back in 2001 because of safety concerns about pig viruses that could be passed to humans. George Church, there we go, a Harvard Medical School genetics professor and researcher, and also works for the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering and one of the founders of CRISPR, tackled the problem 2 years ago using a gene editing tool known as CRISPR to trim away potentially harmful virus genes that have impeded the use of pig organs for transplants in humans. Church has since formed a company named eGenesis Bio to develop humanized pigs that do not provoke a rejection response or transfer viruses to people. The company last month raised $38 million in venture funding. I wonder who that was from. Eventually, Church said the process could enable researchers to harvest a dozen different organs and tissues from a single pig before then making it your disease-free bacon. Church then estimates that the first transplants involving humanized pig organs could occur in a clinical trial later this year, but these would only be used on people too sick to receive human organs. Well, let's involve another one of those names. Genome pioneer Craig J. Venter's Synthetic Genomics has been working for 2 years with United Therapeutics on editing the pig genome and mixing in human cells to overcome complex issues evolved in immune rejection. It is not like changing a couple of genes and you got it solved, says Venter. Stanton, and that would be from Smithfield, would not rule out breeding genetically modified animals, but said that Smithfield's first ventures would likely involve whole pig organs that could go through decellularization, which is a process in which existing cells are all washed away and replaced with human cells, utilizing the scaffolding to grow your new organ. And Miro Matrix Medical Inc. of Eden Prairie, Minnesota, for example, is using whole pig livers to make a surgical mesh used in hernia repair and breast reconstruction, and is working toward developing replacement livers, hearts, and kidneys. Church welcomes the involvement of a big pork producer like Smithfield, even though we've got companies like eGenesis that would make the first pigs. You still are going to need someone who will breed them and who will do it to scale. Dun, dun, dun. So one more story about Smithfield and this whole thing that is going on. And this one is out of Dr. Mercola's publication, Mercola.com. Smithfield is engineering pigs for use in human transplants. April 25th, 2017, the world's largest pork producer, Smithfield Foods, is branching out from ham and bacon toward the business of organ transplantation. The Giant has created a new bioscience unit for this purpose in hopes of growing pig organs that could one day be transplanted into humans. Smithfield was bought by the WH Group, formerly known as Shanghui, the largest meat producing processing company in China, and for $7.1 billion, which was 30% above its estimated market value, was the largest ever Chinese buyout of an American company. Smith is now part of a public-private tissue engineering consortium, along with pharmaceutical and other health companies that are being funded by an $80 million grant from the U.S. Department of Defense. And the move isn't surprising. Reuters points out the materials from 16 million Smithfield pigs, including pancreases, intestinal membranes, and thyroid glands, are sent for medical uses every year. The market for such products, as well as pork byproducts used for pet foods and other non-food purposes, is more than $100 billion in the U.S. alone. And Courtney Statton, VP of Smithfield Bioscience, told Business Insider just about how they plan to cash in on the less popular food-wise pig parts. This is just crazy, guys. This is a food producer. So it hasn't happened yet, but the research is moving this way. And one of the hurdles is that organs could transmit viruses from pigs to people, but this has been somewhat tackled via technology called CRISPR to delete the virus's genes. And there's also a risk that these pig organs could be rejected by humans. So you got Georgie Porgy Church working to engineer the zoonotic viruses out of the organs. And then you got Craig Venter working on the immune system problem on a project with the Department of Defense. Other companies in the market, which come from the biotech industry, have bred pigs with human genes added to their livers, kidneys, and hearts. And earlier this year, researchers from the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in La Jolla, California, made history by creating a human-pig hybrid, a task achieved by injecting days-old pig embryo with human pluripotent stem cells, which I thought we just read that the human pluripotent didn't work. It was the other stem cell. Such cells, like embryonic stem cells, are able to divide indefinitely and become any type of cell in the body. The human pig embryo was then transferred into adult pigs and allowed to grow for up to 4 weeks before they were removed and analyzed. The ability to grow human organs in pigs is undoubtedly an intriguing idea for research, and especially as about 76,000 Americans sit in wait of healthy organs for transplant. But the reality is that these GMO technologies could have unforeseen and devastating consequences. The work inevitably raises the specter of intelligent animals with humanized brains, and also the potential for bizarre hybrid creatures to be accidentally released into the wild. Indeed, no one knows if inserting human cells into non-human animal embryos might lead to the creation of non-human animals with human consciousnesses. But for Smithfield, however, ethical considerations don't appear to be top of mind. The company is one of a $4 billion transnational company. Tyson, JBS, and Cargill are others that produce about 85% of the U.S. meat. And as Ronnie Cunnings of the Organic Consumer Association put it, what these big four fear is the thought of consumers waking up to the horrible horrors of factory farming and the filthy contaminated meat that comes out of those animal prisons. So now back to a story that we read on Wednesday. CRISPR slices virus genes out of pigs. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that was this one. Sorry. CRISPR makes pig disease resistant. CRISPR pigs make disease resistant bacon. That's what it was. This was out of Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, GenEngNews.com. Now, a team of investigators at the University of Edinburgh, this is happening all over the globe, by the way, and the biotech company Genus, and they did not come up in any of those earlier stories, have used the genome editing tool CRISPR to engineer pigs that are potentially resistant to porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome. And these zoonotic viruses can pass along to humans. You don't want to get those in our food. But what's even more frightening, so as all of this is going on, I ran across a story the other day Six companies are about to merge into the biggest farm business oligopoly in history. Wait till you hear this one. And this was actually from a year ago, just a few days back, September 20th, 2016. Big farms are about to get a lot bigger. With six agricultural giants on the verge of merging into three separate companies, consumers and farmers are feeling uneasy about the global implications and how this might impact the food system. And that's food, P-H-O-O-D. Top executives from Bayer, Monsanto, DuPont, Dow Chemical, and Syngenta on September 20th testified before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee in Washington, making a case for why federal regulators should approve mega mergers, which stand to fundamentally reorganize global agriculture. Executives from the sixth company involved in the consolidation, which was the China National Chemical Corporation, declined an invitation to appear at the hearing. The executives in attendance argued that the proposed mergers would combine their company's expertise and allow for greater efficiency in serving farmers and consumers. But whether that efficiency is worth the side effects of mass consolidation, possible price hikes, and less competition in the marketplace is open to a question. In essence, people should people put faith in the three big companies to shepherd consumers and farmers into a world that can responsibly feed a growing global population? Well, this is what's on the table. On July 20th, 2016, shareholders at Dow Chemical and DuPont agreed to a $59 billion merger that would bring under one umbrella two of the U.S. largest chemical makers. The deal is awaiting U.S. antitrust clearance. I wonder what happened to that. On August 22nd, 2016, Chinese state-owned China National Chemical Corp. was cleared by U.S. regulators to proceed with its $42 billion purchase of Swiss chemical and seed company Syngenta. The deal, subject to U.S. scrutiny, and I was wondering why, because of Syngenta's American business interests, marks the largest purchase of a foreign firm in Chinese history. Ding, ding, ding. So I wonder if that was more or less than Smithfield. On September 14th, Bayer, the German pharmaceutical and chemical giant, said that it had reached an agreement to purchase U.S. seed company Monsanto for $66 billion. And if the deal is approved by U.S. regulators, it would create the world's largest seed and agriculture chemical company. The consolidation of these six highly competitive companies into three juggernauts has left many farmers and consumers uneasy. Consumer advocates say that they worry the mergers will usher in a new era of sterile crops soaked in dangerous pesticides. And that's probably exactly what's going to happen. And farmers worry that less competition in the marketplace will give the merged companies an ability to increase the price of seeds and chemicals, something that would be particularly harmful during a time when the U.S. farm incomes are dropping. Also would give them billions of dollars to lobby Washington to pass all of these new technologies as safe so they can get them into the marketplace. And that is the case that the National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson made to senators, warning that the approval of mergers would not only lead to higher prices, but also less innovation and fewer products from which farmers could choose. Even the almighty American Farm Bureau lobby expressed some trepidation. Any one of these mergers and acquisition activities could be well understood. All of them occurring at the same time is a challenge, says Bob Young, chief economist for the lobby. Obviously, you'd rather have six companies, but if the economics aren't there to justify six companies, then it just won't happen. And for their part, the company executives stress that in a world where internet companies such as Google can pivot quickly to manufacturing driverless cars, and Amazon co-founder Jeff Bezos can invest in rockets, the nimbleness of agriculture will be paramount. So let's get into biopharmaceuticals. Change can be rough for farmers, testifies Rob Faley, Monsanto's chief technology officer. But in our industry, it is changing. Farmers are best served with companies investing in new technologies. Fraley noted that 15 years ago, Monsanto invested $300 million in research and development. And this year, it has invested $1.5 billion. And by way of comparison, he said that the big name technology firms such as Apple are spending upwards of $10 billion on R&D. Left unsaid by the company that was, with the exception of Bayer, the U.S. and the European giants have experienced shrinking sales. And as Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina puts it, Dow numbers look like an EKG of a heart attack patients. But from that perspective, the mergers are as much about maintaining profit and staying financially healthy as they are about the development of new technologies. And that's the key. It is not just a case of the American farmer needing more technologically advanced tools. It is also a white flag from big agribusiness companies struggling with the fact that despite all their efficiencies and inventions, the U.S. market is demanding supplies that let farmers grow more profitable and less complicated, organic, and all-natural foods. So they're going to have to force it in you or make it into a probiotic. So whether that trend continues remains to be seen, but for now, the mergers are a clear sign that the companies that invest in high-tech seeds and chemicals are going through a rough patch, and they think that consolidation is the way out of it. So here's one that I pulled up just to kind of add insult to industry. Insult to injury. July 29th, 2010, on a popular sciencepopsci.com, how pharmaceutical companies turn genetically modified livestock into drug factories. Farms have always provided a steady supply of milk, cheese, and meat. Now add medicine to the list. Last year, the Food and Drug Administration approved the first medication produced in genetically modified livestock, and that would have been in 2009. So 2008, they approved cloned animals. In 2009, they approved the very first medication to be produced in genetically modified livestock, and this was called Atryn, A-T-R-Y-N, which is an anticoagulant grown in goats. And now several drug companies have launched their own animal-made modifications and medications. The drugs work as well as the ones synthesized in the lab, only the process of making them is different. Scientists insert a human gene for a medically useful protein into an animal's embryo's DNA and then place the embryo into a surrogate mother. But wait a second, isn't that an animal-human-animal chimera? And this was in 2010. Once the animal matures, so they even let these human genes in an animal's embryo mature. The other one they didn't. A technician can then extract the protein from its milk in greater quantities than can be produced in the lab. Raising a goat is far easier than standard methods of creating protein-based medicines, such as growing batches of altered cells or pulling proteins from the donated human blood. It is also cost-effective. William Hayden, the CEO of GTC Biotherapeutics, the maker of Atryn, says that running a farm instead of a building dedicated production line saves his company hundreds of millions of dollars, and scaling up production is easy as letting the animals mate. Some scientists warn that transgenic animals could introduce modified DNA into other herds, but these livestock could also drastically cut the prices of life-saving drugs. Here, a look into a farmer's medicine cabinet, and that's P-H-A-R-M-E-R-S. So, guys, this is in 2010, so they are lying when they're telling you that pig-human chimera was the first, because that is not true. All right, so goats can make Atryn. The advantage is that by the time this transgenic goat is 18 months old, it can produce 211 gallons of Atryn-laced milk a year. Cows can churn out more, but they take twice as long to reach milk-producing age. The FDA approved this product, and it is now available through CTG Biotherapeutics. There's also another one that they are doing with rabbits, and this is called Rucin, R-H-U-C-I-N. It is a drug for the 1 in 30,000 people afflicted with hereditary angioedema, a condition in which the immune system causes painful swelling of the skin, intestines, and mouth. Also in tests for reducing post-transplant organ inflammation. The advantage is the speed, because Rucin is injected directly into the bloodstream, can be administered in low doses, and quick breeding inexpensive rabbits that produce the 1,680 milligrams a day in their milk can meet the demand. A Dutch company, Farming recently finished clinical trials in Europe and expects to approve it here this next month. Cows, they can produce a drug called biohormone, a synthetic version of human growth hormone. The demand for HGH is high, and multiple daily injections are the norm. Cows produce the greatest volume of milk in any transgenic livestock. A biohormone cow can make 26 grams of HGH per gallon of milk. A company called, no, it's an Artesian company called BioCedus is starting clinical trials as soon as this winter. Then in pigs, there's human factor V, so human factor 8, Roman numeral 8, and Roman numeral 9, which are the main treatments for hemophilia A and B, which affect 1 in 4,000 and 1 in 20,000 men, respectively, worldwide. Compatibility. Pigs' biochemistry is nearly identical to humans, so proteins they produce are less likely to be rejected. Pigs make up to 50 times as much HFIX per gallon of milk as is usually found in human blood, and perhaps 600 times as much of the HF Roman numeral 8. HFIX is in preclinical animal trials led by the University of Nebraska, and HF Roman numeral 8 is in preclinical trials starting next year. So they are using animals to produce pharmaceuticals in their milk. From corn to cattle, gene editing is about to supercharge agriculture. April 17th, 2017. Corn isn't the sexiest crop, but it is one of the most important. It is the most abundant grain on earth that is used as food, biofuel around the globe. And in ancient times, Mesoamericans thrived on it, waged wars over it, and their myths claim that corn was the matter from which the gods created mankind itself. But just as corn helped create civilizations, these civilized people helped create corn through meticulous selective breeding. Today's grain hardly resembles its ancestors. Compared to the wild plant first cultivated by ancient Mexicans 10,000 years ago, modern corn is a super mutant. And yet, after all those thousands of years of cultivation, just two main genes are thought to be responsible for the evolution of the corn we eat today. Selective breeding is painstakingly slow and imprecise, but all that is about to change. A new gene editing tool like CRISPR-Cas9 now lets scientists hack into genomes, making precision incisions and inserting desired traits into plants and animals. And we'll soon have corn with higher yield crops, mushrooms that don't brown, pigs with more meat on the bone, or no diseases in their meat, or growing human organs, and disease-resistant cattle. Changes that took years, decades, or even centuries can now be made in a matter of months. And in the next 5 years, you might eat a corn tortilla chip made from edited corn, or it might be today. And by 2020, you might drink milk from an edited cow, or maybe you are already. Dubbed the CRISPR Revolution, these scientific advances in gene editing have huge potential that many experts think could help fortify our food system and feed the increasing population of farmers who are threatened by food scarcity caused in part by climate change. Of course it is. So let's get in the farmed food. And the CRISPR Revolution. But not everyone is so certain. Oh, those people who always think the sky is falling. Beyond the contentious legal battles that have thus far complicated CRISPR science, calling into question who can and who can't use the technology, some consumer rights advocates think that these tools will be used to maintain the status quo of an industry based primarily on corporate profits. Meanwhile, the residual worry about genetically modified organisms may influence the public perception of gene-edited organisms, steering consumers toward the organic aisle despite scientific evidence. But remember, anything that is CRISPRed is not legally considered genetically modified because they have not supposedly inserted anything into it. Just cut things out. Gene editing is, simply put, the act of making intentional changes to the DNA in order to create an organism with specific trait or traits. It's like using a word processor to edit words in a sentence. It's that simple. It's like eating a banana for the amount of radiation you're exposed to from three melting down reactors. But don't worry about that either. Geneticists insist that we don't confuse this genetic modification, otherwise called genetic engineering, which introduces new genes from different species in order to achieve desired traits. So no chimeras. The difference may sound trivial, but experts say that it could help calm the concerns associated with GMOs. Because remember, how do we sell CRISPR to the public? Considering the simplification, we have the sentence, the cat has a hat. But we want it to be more descriptive about the hat's color. So we're going to snip, snip, snip. With modification, we would borrow the German word for black and write, the cat has a Schwartz hat. The sentence makes sense, sort of, but it's obvious that some people would have problems, maybe even improperly use language. But with editing, we don't have to borrow a word from another language. We just instead insert the English word and write, the cat has a black hat. Yeah, let's make it so stupid, dumb, and simple, because people just don't get this stuff. I mean, I can't even get over like how they are trying to explain this. In older, more traditional systems, scientists would take genes from one species and put it into a plant to confer a particular trait on that plant, or they would take genes from a fish that caused it not to freeze in Arctic water and put it into a tomato to make the Arctic flounder tomato, which they did do that, by the way. Look that one up. Anyway, co-founder of Caribou Biosciences told Digital Trends that they would just take traits of one plant, put them into another. But that's not what we're looking to do. We are looking to use CRISPR gene editing to achieve the same outcome that we can get from traditional breeding, just faster. The ability to edit with such speed and precision is relatively new and due largely to CRISPR, which emerged straight from nature. So it's considered organic as well, to become the most popular and powerful gene editing tool used today. Discovered in bacteria in the late 80s, and Georgie Porgy Church was one of the first to engineer that E. coli. It wasn't until 2005 that researchers began to unravel its role. Scientists found that when certain bacteria come under attack from viruses, they use special enzymes to cut, copy, and save a bit of the viral DNA. And later, if the intruder returns, the bacteria can then quickly recognize it and react to defend itself. A few years later, researchers realized that this system could be used to cut and edit the DNA of any organism, not just viruses. So in 2012, Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuel Charpentier published the first paper demonstrating on how CRISPR can be used to edit an organism's genome. Not only is the technique far cheaper, faster, and more precise than the conventional genetic modification, it avoids many, if not all, of the issues raised by skeptics whose main concern pointed toward the creation of transgenic organisms, and that is a chimera. But whereas genetic modification entails combining DNA from multiple species, gene editing entails altering the DNA of one species with a trait that already exists naturally. And that is how they got the law around having to label this stuff as genetically modified. Gene editing is not all about taking DNA from a foreign species and integrating it into a plant, though it could be. It is really about working within the constraints of the plant's own genome. Just over 4 years ago, Howitz founded Caribou as a spinoff from Doudna's lab at the University of California, Berkeley. Since then, her team has partnered with companies around the world, providing licensing rights to use the startup's version of the gene editing tool. And one of those partnerships may see the first CRISPR-edited organism come to market via the DuPont Pioneer, one of the world's biggest chemical companies. And I thought I saw also that Monsanto had licensed CRISPR as well. The day before Halloween 2015, Yingong Yang submitted an AMI regulated letter to the United States Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. He and his colleagues at Penn State University had used CRISPR to knock out a gene in white button mushrooms that makes them go brown over time. Without that browning gene, the white buttons look better and last longer, and Yang wanted to know whether his mushrooms could legally go to market. And we covered that story when that came out. That was the landmark ruling that stated that CRISPRing is not considered genetic modification. The following spring, the department's response resonated throughout the scientific and agricultural community. It did not consider CRISPR-Cas9 white button mushrooms to be regulated. And they wrote that in an open letter. It was a landmark decision because Yang's mushroom was the first gene-edited crop cleared for commercial sale by the FDA, which made a clear distinction between genetic modification, gene editing, and it set a precedent for those to come. A few days later, DuPont, which is the largest chemical corporation in the world, received a similar response from the USDA regarding its CRISPR-edited waxy corn that is disease-resistant and drought-tolerant. DuPont wasted no time announcing plans to take its crop to market within the next 5 to 10 years. The USDA has said that these products do not fall into their remit, as their remit is really focused on, say, plant pathogens or noxious weeds. At the same time, we are seeing the FDA put out a call for information as they were looking at their own remit to oversee the entire food supply, not just products made with modern biotechnology. And I think they were looking to members of the scientific and business communities to really weigh in over the next few months. But for Yang's part, he intends to improve his mushroom before making them commercially available. Does he have to get approved again? Although not legally required, he plans to seek approval from the Food and Drug Administration and the Environmental Protection Agency. Edited waxy corn may find its way into the food system much sooner than the white button mushrooms, if not as a human food, then as a fodder for growing numbers of livestock around the world. Meanwhile, these livestock are also undergoing genetic edits as CRISPRs use the same tools to make animals healthier, meatier, and more productive. Pigs harbor a lot of diseases, and there are a few bad porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome viruses, causes pregnant mothers to miscarry, and makes it difficult for piglets to breathe. It is a problem for pig farmers as well, and every year, this virus costs the industry $1.6 billion in Europe and $664 million in the U.S., The impacts of the disease for producers are often devastating, says John Leitner, chief scientific officer at biotech company Genus. And the impacts on these animals themselves are terrible. But his team is working on a solution. Scientists at Genus and the University of Edinburgh demonstrated how CRISPR could remove, and we read this one the other day, the CD163 molecule from pigs and get rid of zoonotic viruses. Swine are also subject of research at Seoul National University in South Korea, where scientists led by Jin Soo Kim are using a different gene editing tool called Talon to create meatier double muscle pigs by removing a gene that inhibits the muscle growth. We could do this through breeding, Kim told Nature back in 2015, but they would take decades. In fact, farmers have developed similar traits through breeding Belgian Blues, a type of super sculpted prized beef cattle for its lean meat and its beefy body. It took over 100 years to establish those traits in the breed. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, and that's where they are working on modifying cows as well for their horns. They had a startup called Recombinetics, and they are using the same Talon gene editing technique to cut decades down to days, removing the horned gene from a common dairy cow and inserting the one that makes Angus beef cattle naturally dehorned or polled. Polled cattle are desirable because they pose less threat to their handlers and to each other, and you can put more into a shipping crate. And as Tad Sungard, chief science officer of Acelligen, a Recombinetic subsidiary, explained, polled cattle in certain breeds are simply less productive. The issue is that the top of dairy bulls that everyone wants are horned. the animals that are polled are already existing and have a difference of about $250 over their lifetime. If you're running a 1,000-head dairy operation, that is a lot of money. What many ranchers do instead is dehorn their cattle, which is a stressful practice when anesthesia is used, and a painful practice when it isn't, and a significant expense for ranchers either way. If we could integrate the polled phenotype into the dairy system, it would eliminate dehorning for at least 7 or 8 million animals a year. And if you include beef cattle, that's up to 15 million. Recombinetics has already bred a couple gene-edited calves, which are now undergoing care and monitoring at UC Davis. But before any gene-edited cows produce milk in our grocery stores, Stungart said that scientists would need to prove that milk from these cows is similar to horned and polled cattle's haven't had gene editing. That would be simple enough, and it would turn out to be the same, he says. As the global population grows, so does the demand for food. And while farmers around the world face food scarcity generated in part by climate change, that makes for caring for plants and livestock an increasingly difficult task. But CRISPR-like tools may be able to help, so don't worry about it. On the plant side, we are looking at ways to breed plants that are more drought-tolerant and in other ways can better survive the stresses of climate change like Dow was with their corn. And I think that is incredibly valuable and important as we look at the exploding global population that Bill Gates is trying to tamp down on. Caribou has also partnered with Genus and is in a project to breed PRRS-resistant pigs. Beyond his work at Recombinetics, Sundgaard sits on a scientific advisory board of the Center for Tropical Livestock Genetics and Health, which is a Gates Foundation-backed initiative, of course it is, to improve the genetics of native livestock in tropical regions and probably using gene drives. The most productive livestock breed cannot survive the heat or diseases present in a tropical environment. And breeds native to tropical environments haven't had the same selective breeding that generate highly productive livestock. Most of the indigenous animals have not been under strict artificial selection, says Stungart. It has all been done anecdotally, and since most farmers don't have that many cows and their systems aren't that big, meanwhile, most of the new DNA introduced in these herds is just